Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go, another show.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Hi, folks. We're going to be speaking with author Huey Freeman about who shot Nick Ivey, a cover-up about a ambushed border agent by Mexican cartels to protect the Obama re-election and to keep Operation Fast and Furious from going public. We're going to have that whole story here in just a minute. Stick around. We'll be going
Thank
live.
Thank you for listening to Patriot Nation Radio, 347-637-3942.
Attention conservatives, big social media is targeting conservatives like you and me in an effort to silence us and the truth. The free speech social media that you have waited for is here at LibertyRush.com. No longer do you have to be distracted by fake news. Join the war on fake news at LibertyRush.com, the official alternative with no libtard rhetoric. Guaranteed. LibertyRush.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
Yes, indeed, folks, and you can hear Dave Bray's last record, Music on a Mission, Storyteller Edition, out now at DaveBrayUSA.com. Make sure to head on over to LibertyRush.com. Social media without the libtarded rhetoric, as you heard our good friend say there in his ad promo. And today we got a great show on tap for you. We're going to tell you how to get this book. We're going to tell you some of the details within this book. It is called Who Shot Nick Ivey. This is a story you probably even haven't heard about because it was covered up. The media didn't talk about it. And they kept it under wraps, and they were very quiet about it. So we're going to talk about it today, but I want to play something real fast that came my way in regards to this coronavirus, and then we'll get started right away. Please share this show if you're in the live feed. Hello, everybody there in the live feed. Let me just write this little message that I like to put up here for everyone. Hello, everyone. Please share. Thank you. And check this out and play this real quick. This was sent to me in regards to the Stanford study on the antibodies of coronavirus. It's a game changer, folks. We're going to play it now. Here we go. Check it out. It may have an ad connected to it.
There was some big news today out of Stanford University. We have been waiting for the results of their antibody test. It'll be the first random sample antibody test done here locally in the United States, which is key for us knowing when it is safe for us to go back and resume normal life. We had a chance today to study some of the top line results of that survey, and we want to share with you right now what that study means for you and for your family and our country's fight against coronavirus. First, a couple of things about Stanford individually. Stanford is rated the number 6 overall university in the country, according to the annual survey that is done by U.S. News and World Report. And that puts the Cardinal ahead of several Ivy League schools, Johns Hopkins, Caltech, and others. Stanford is also rated the number 4 medical research institution in the country. So its credentials are globally recognized. You will not find better experts anywhere in America. Stanford set out recently to do the first random sample antibody test for SARS-2 coronavirus in the country in order to determine the virus's true infection and mortality rate, since most of the testing and data we currently have comes from the people in areas most immediately impacted by the virus. So we're constantly getting worst-case scenarios. Random sampling is necessary in order to produce a scientific survey that helps us to know how the virus may impact a community or country as a whole. The presence of antibodies means that a person has already been exposed to the virus and was never sick or recovered and is now immune. Either way, it's highly unlikely they can be infected or infect others any longer. It is vitally important to know how widespread the SARS-2 coronavirus antibodies are in determining how soon we can return to normal life safely. The Stanford study weighted prevalence of antibodies in SARS-2 coronavirus in a sample of 3,330 people, adjusting for zip code, sex, race, ethnicity, etc., in Santa Clara County, California, just like you should for a scientific random sample called a serology test. Stanford found 2.49% to 4.16% of the people it randomly sampled had SARS-2 coronavirus antibodies. Santa Clara County has a population of 1.9 million people. If the mean prevalence suggested by the Stanford study is 3.33%, it would mean just over 63,000 residents in Santa Clara County have or had COVID-19. But as of Friday, April 17th, according to the California Department of Health, only 1,833 people in Santa Clara County have confirmed positive for COVID-19. So based on the Stanford serology test, the true number of cases in Santa Clara County is 35 times greater than what has been confirmed through the Department of Health's COVID-19 testing. Further, the California Department of Health reports 70 people have perished due to COVID-19 in Santa Clara County. But the current inferred case fratality rate, that's 70 divided by 1,833, would sit at 3.8% of those who get the virus die. But based on the Stanford test, that case fatality rate plunges to just over 0.1%. That means the current inferred case fatality rate of COVID-19 in Santa Clara County is off by a factor of 38. If you extrapolate the mean prevalence of the Stanford study out to the rest of the country, again, using that mean number of 3.33%, it would mean nearly 11 million people in America have been infected with this virus. According to Johns Hopkins University, 33,398 people nationwide have perished. Well, with the Stanford infection rate, that would make the case fatality rate of the virus nationwide barely over 0.3%. Not 0.3% of the American people, but just 0.3% of those who have gotten the virus. By comparison, last year's flu season, according to CDC, had a case fatality rate of 0.09%. So even the Stanford study confirms the SARS-2 coronavirus is deadlier than the flu, though not nearly as lethal as we originally feared when we shut down the country. To localize this study, let's take a look at my home state of Iowa. With a population of about 3 million people, a 3.33% prevalence mean or infection rate, which means 100,000 Iowans would have been infected, or 43 times higher than the reported confirmed cases of 2,332. According to the Iowa Department of Public Health, 64 Iowans have died from the disease. That would mean, according to the Stanford Serology Survey, the case fatality rate in my home state is only 0.06%. And again, that is not 0.06% of Iowans, but 0.06% of Iowans who have had the virus. Conclusion. Stanford, one of America's elite universities, is reporting the virus is somewhere between 50 to 85 times more infectious than we currently report, but 50 to 85 times less lethal than we feared based on the random sample's margin for error. Furthermore, this lends credibility to my theory, based on research from CDC, that the SARS-2 coronavirus was already here, wreaking havoc much of the flu pneumonia season, because it's unlikely even that level of infection could happen in Santa Clara County just since mid-March. And if it has been here the whole time, the shutdowns were unnecessary to flatten the curve or slow the spread. Both of these efforts were futile because the horse had already left the barn. All we did was risk socioeconomic ruin after the fact. Finally, even if my theory of earlier infection is not true, At the very least, the Stanford survey confirms we are still short of herd immunity, or the moment when so much of the population has been exposed and is now immune to an outbreak that you stop the contagion. And there is no way for us to achieve herd immunity under lockdown because we have kept too many of the healthy at home. Stanford's data confirms we must end these lockdowns immediately, either because it was already too late to stop the spread, or we're making it worse by putting off achieving the herd immunity we need to get our way of life back.
All right, that's Steve Deese of the Steve Deese Show laying it on the line. So 11 million people, according to the study by Stanford University, have been infected with COVID-19, with a death rate of just over 0.3% of the 11 million, 0.3, not 3 or 3.3 or 4, 0.3% of the 11 million affected have passed away. This is not a pandemic. This is a fear campaign to steal your rights. There is people dying. Don't get me wrong. I understand people are dying. And it's, you know, if you know somebody, I know a lot of people who have friends and people they know close to them that are dying. And to them, this pandemic is real. But the media is blowing it up. 0.3 of the 11 million infected have passed away. This is an extremely low number. When you spread that out across the country, becomes 0.003, less deadly than car accidents and other things. Or maybe we ban cars, I don't know. But there is a pandemic out there and people are dying. So you got to remain safe and people are scared. So wear your masks. You got to love your fellow man and help them get through this. Their people are very scared. People know people who have passed away. So there is definitely something happening, but it is blown way out of proportion. And I believe the states and the governors are blowing it out of proportion and the media so they can get their hands on more of the money, especially states like New York, where the governor would have already had a $6 billion deficit. And just in January claimed that they had plenty of resources to take care of illegal aliens. And fast forward to March now, they don't have enough equipment to take care of their own citizens. They can take care of the illegal aliens, but just not the citizens. But we're going to go back now to our regularly scheduled program. Who Shot Nick Ivey is a book written by our featured guest tonight, Huey Freeman. I'm going to tell you how you can get a copy of the book, what led him to do the book, and all this stuff. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, welcome our guest, Huey Freeman, author of Who Shot Nick Ivey, live on the Patriot Nation Radio Show right now. Good morning, Nick. What's happening, sir? I'm sorry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
That's okay, Mark. Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Good morning. How are you feeling this morning? Good.
I'm feeling great, and that Stanford study, I was aware of it. I have posted on my Facebook page about it, and it's marvelous to think that they're overstating by a degree of 50 to 85 times how lethal, meaning fatal, that this epidemic is. I mean, I don't want to, you know, spend time on this. There's better experts who realize this is a big media blow-up. This is all exactly in fitting with what my book is about. It's deception to the highest degree. My book is about a deception that occurred 5 weeks before the election of 2012 by the Obama administration. I say my book, Who Shot Nick Ivey, is about the most successful cover-up of the Obama administration. That's why 99.9% of the people have not heard about it. The media did not respond to it. I know there was one prominent investigative reporter who I have a great admiration for, who I heard was going to cover this, but she was so busy covering Benghazi, which just heard exactly it just occurred 3 weeks before the Nick Ivey incident that she just felt like she couldn't also cover this. Nick Ivey was shot to death on October 2, 2012 by an ambush by smugglers with two eyewitnesses under a bright full moon in the Mule Mountains, 4.3 miles north of the border. And the both of the eyewitnesses, the other Border Patrol agents who were there who were ambushed, told the true story. Their true stories were that when they arrived on the mountain ridge, on the mountain saddle, and Nick was already there, immediately they came under fire by smugglers. And these stories were told to the FBI. Gracie Borjas, who was the first one who was interviewed, she was interviewed 3 hours after the incident by the FBI. She told the story 20 minutes after the incident to a Border Patrol supervisor. I have the documents that provide the evidence. I was a crime reporter. I covered about 50 homicides for a daily newspaper. So all this evidence is so shocking to me because I work closely with a prosecutor who has a 100% conviction record on homicides, and I had covered so many homicides with really honorable prosecutors and law enforcement officers who only take good cases to court. And to see this was a case that should have been taken to court to prosecute the actual smugglers, two of whom I believe were the ones who shot Nick, who actually were taken into custody. And they're in my book, and they were released. Okay, so I actually have the names of two smugglers who were taken into custody.
That's crazy. Now, this gentleman, Nick Ivey, was stationed in the same Border Patrol station as Brian Terry.
Brian Terry, yeah.
Is that correct?
Well, you hit on something that's extremely important in my book, is that Brian Terry was a BORTAC agent, means he was an elite tactical agent for the Border Patrol. At one time, before he became BORTAC agent, he was stationed out of the NACO station. But 2 weeks before Nick Ivey was killed, they named the NACO station, the brand new facility, after Brian Terry. To this day, it is called the Brian A. Terry Border Patrol Station. So this is what I believe is the motive for the incredibly successful cover-up. The cover-up that occurred that was involved with Obama and Eric Holder, the Attorney General, and Janet Napolitano, the Homeland Security Secretary. Okay, so the cover-up said that no smugglers were involved. The FBI released this 3 days later. No smugglers were involved. It was just Border Patrol agents shooting at each other, which is utter nonsense, utter total nonsense. They came upon each other, and smugglers opened fire. Okay, so the connection with Brian Terry is very interesting, because I believe this is the main motive for the cover-up. Okay, number one.
Let me step in here real fast. They had strict rules down on the border for border agents where they were not supposed to fire their weapons. They were supposed to call in and say, hey. And they were firing their weapons. I learned this during the Casey Massey case, that the Border Patrol are not allowed to shoot. They are completely and utterly have their hands tied down there. So the fact that they would even claim they were shooting at each other goes beyond their rules and regulations at the time for the border guards and their agents and everybody else.
Well, they're extremely cautious. I mean, they are allowed to shoot. If smugglers are shooting at them, they are allowed to shoot. Of course, with the Brian Terry case, they gave Brian Terry and his fellow BORTAC agents, they were under orders to shoot beanbag ammunition at smugglers who were firing at them. And that's a whole other story that's been covered very well. But the connection between Brian Terry and Nick Ivey is so important, because as all this publicity, there was a tremendous amount of publicity, national, international publicity, that came out when Nick was killed. And they all associated this with Brian Terry, because Nick was the next Border Patrol agent in the United States that was killed, that was shot to death after Brian Terry. And the Border Patrol station Nick was working out of was named. So all this publicity from ABC, New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, the Mail Online from London, which has 45 million subscribers, the largest media operation in the world. So anyway, the point is that every single media outlet said Nick Ivey was working out of the Brian Terry Border Patrol station, which was named after Brian Terry, whose death led to the exposure of the Fast and Furious gun running operation of the Obama administration. So you can see President Obama, October 2, the next day was the first debate of the election, which was 5 weeks away. So all of a sudden, there's all this publicity throughout the nation on Fast and Furious. So what do they do? The 2 days after the debate, which, by the way, Obama lost, and suddenly his reelection is in jeopardy, Robert Mueller was head of the FBI. I show in my book, Robert Mueller and Obama were very close, unlike previous FBI directors and presidents. They were close. They met regularly with each other, and Mueller was known to be corrupt even then, when people didn't even know his name. He usually stayed in the background. People didn't even know he was FBI director under Obama. A lot of people don't know that. But anyway, so what they did was, just 3 days after Nick was killed, the FBI announces, and I want to read this. Now, it's very brief. It's the announcement of what they said, and which is totally false. Okay, death of United States Border Patrol agent Nicholas J. Ivey and the injury to a second agent were the result of an accidental shooting incident involving only the agent. An accidental shooting incident involving only the agent. Nick was shot in the middle of his forehead. He was shot in the middle of his forehead. The only Border Patrol agent who did any return fire when they were ambushed by smugglers, he said he was 20 feet away from Nick when he returned fire. Nick was lying face down dead when Border Patrol agent Dave Johnson returned fire. Dave Johnson told the FBI 2 days later he had been injured in his buttocks and his ankle. Dave Johnson told the FBI 2 days later, after he stood there as they were firing on him, because it was a very fast incident. When Dave and Gracie went up there, they knew or thought that Nick was there already. And Nick said to them on the radio, right before this, he said, "Where are you?" And they said, "We're basically a tenth of a mile out." Okay, they were so close, 3 minutes away walking. And then he said 10-4. So when they went up, they thought he was there by himself. Well, the smugglers were there hiding, and as soon as the other two agents appeared, they opened fire. So after they were fired upon, Dave Johnson, who had military training, he put his M4 to his shoulder, and he opened fire on them. And he said he looked through his sight, and he saw nothing as he looked through his sight. Okay, so he opened fire on them. So you don't hit someone in the middle of their forehead when you're just shooting suppressive fire in the direction of muzzle fire, and then you would have known that you hit somebody in the middle of the forehead. And by the way, he only took 6 shots in rapid succession, semi-auto, and which he shot could have shot within like literally 1 second, believe it or not. So he didn't shoot. But the most important point of my book is the legal theory of felony murder, which is this. Okay, if a Border Patrol agent or any law enforcement officer shoots in the direction of another officer and accidentally injures or kills them after they were opened fire on by criminals, the criminals are guilty of first-degree murder. So actually, I went a long distance to prove that Dave Johnson or Gracie did not kill Nick Ivey, because I strongly believe they didn't fire the shot that assassinated him. But even if they did, it's totally irrelevant, because the fact is that when they showed up on this mountain ridge with a full, bright full moon where you could see a long way, they were fired upon by smugglers, which Gracie and Dave both clearly stated, and everything they say matches all this other evidence, a tremendous amount of evidence that I put in my book. My book is based on evidence, and that's why the FBI and the Border Patrol have been totally silent in relation to my book. So getting back to the felony murder rule. Okay, let's say me and my buddies, we decide we're going to rob a bank. We go into the bank. We start firing at some security officers and police officers, and then the security officers and police officers start firing, and one of their bullets kills a law enforcement officer. Me and my buddies are guilty of first-degree murder. We committed the crime, and that's why the FBI knew. The FBI has a lot of lawyers. They knew they had to say nobody else was involved. They fabricated the idea that it was friendly fire, but they had to say nobody else was involved. And there were smugglers arrested several hours later. That's clearly documented. They were arrested in the vicinity, just south of the border, with firearms and drugs later that morning. And I have the only eyewitness account of their arrest, but there's much media documentation of their arrest, including two stories, one in a Mexican media outlet that calls them the killers of Nick Ivey, that they were arrested for killing Nick Ivey. The FBI went down to Mexico, took their fingerprints, took their DNA, and then didn't ever release this information that they interviewed them. It was an inside word that I got from someone in law enforcement. But I have the FBI documentation from their evidence report that I put in my book of the fact that the FBI interviewed, took their DNA, took their fingerprints, and the FBI never even admitted that they were aware these guys were arrested when there was media reports all over the place saying that they were arrested.
It's crazy stuff. And it was Operation Fast and Furious. Any connection to Nick Ivey? I know that when Brian Terry was killed, Fast and Furious guns from the failed Obama Eric Holder program to ship illegal guns to drug cartels in Mexico. Is there any connection to the Nick Ivey cases, the Brian Terry case?
Okay, so the ATF, okay, the U.S. Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosive Agency, they obtained firearms from the smugglers that were arrested, and they sent them to be processed, okay? Those firearms may or may not have been Fast and Furious weapons. Further research, hopefully, will uncover that. But the most important thing isn't whether the firearms involved in this case were specifically Fast and Furious firearms, because we know in Arizona alone that the Obama Holder administration was involved with sending 2,000 high-powered firearms to the Sinaloa cartel, which is in total control of the traffic of all illegal immigration, which is mostly smuggling. It's not contrary to mythology. It's not just nice guy people coming over to do work, which used to be the case. It was mostly nice Mexican people coming over to do agriculture work. That's no longer the truth. The truth is the Sinaloa cartel was empowered mightily by the Obama Holder administration by all these high-powered weapons. So coincidentally, the Sinaloa cartel took over control of the border traffic coming from the south. simultaneously receiving this arsenal of weapons through the Obama administration. And I've learned a little bit more about, I'm not an expert on Fast and Furious, but I've learned a little more about that. This was much more widespread than has been, that has been shown. But this is important to realize too. The first day, Jan Brewer, who is the Republican governor of Arizona, made this statement. She said, "We shouldn't be only mourning the death of Border Patrol agent Nicholas Ivey. We should also have righteous anger because of the open border policy of the Obama administration, which led to just, tremendous amount of smugglers coming freely across the border. While the Border Patrol, the Border Patrol agents mostly are very wonderful, hardworking, incredibly, doing incredibly dangerous and challenging work, but their hands are tied, and as far as what they can accomplish when they're outnumbered. The Sinaloa cartel has scouts on both sides of the border. They have the best equipment and just tremendous numbers of smugglers that they unleash that outnumber the amount of Border Patrol agents that are there. And the Border Patrol agents are misdirected because they were under the control of the Obama administration at the time. So my point is that publicly Brewer is actually blaming this death on Obama, because it's like not just Fast and Furious, but just the fact that they purposely wanted the borders to be open, and the people suffering in the vicinity, where I spent a lot of time and made a lot of friends with the people living there, and those are the people who really helped me to get the information I needed. Okay, so they've been suffering by the hundreds of thousands of smugglers that have been coming through on a regular basis, and Nick was shot on a main smuggling trail, which this brave, honest Border Patrol agent, Nicholas Ivey, he put the sensor up there on the exact spot so that when the sensor was triggered and the dispatch got word that there's people who are walking around up there on the saddle, Nick knew exactly where it was, and he happened to be on duty. And he walked up there. He hiked up there because the reason he didn't have his horse, he was a horse patrol guy. But the thing is that Fast and Furious is a big part of, number one, why the Sinaloa cartel has such control. Number two, it was a scandal that any other president would have been involved with. They would have been impeached. Even there was, I think it was 43 Democrats voted to hold Eric Holder in contempt of Congress because he would not put forth all the documentation that that Senator Grassley and his Senate committee and ISA and his House committee wanted the documentation to show the truth of all these thousands of weapons that the Obama administration was ordering the ATF, which is under the Department of Justice of Holder, to send to a cartel. So if it weren't for Obama with his incredible shield of not telling the truth about him, whether it's, and never getting any of the truth out through the congressional committees as much as they tried, that even Democrats voted to hold him in contempt of Congress. And even Obama, through his 8 years, he only evoked executive privilege once, and that was to say that we don't have to give you documents on Fast and Furious. This scandal, any other president, it would maybe lead to impeachment, depending on the political makeup of the Congress, but definitely would have not been reelected. I mean, are you kidding me? You're sending firearms to the most evil cartel that actually operates, with atrocities, with sex slaves, and torturing innocent people. That he's purposely sending weapons to them for various nefarious reasons. So the point is, they did a great job of covering up Fast and Furious, and they did a wonderful job of covering up the Nick Ivey, case. I was able to write Who Shot Nick Ivey. It was a unique privilege because I heard about this story. I worked for 2.5 years full-time on this book. It's 350 pages. It's totally evidence-based. It's totally documents, and I worked especially with my friend who's a prosecutor, who's the number one prosecutor in the county where I used to work for a daily newspaper. I was working full-time as a crime reporter for a daily newspaper in Illinois when I came upon this story, and I thought this is amazing. And I'm going to have this story. No one else is going to do this. Unbelievable.
And then the media goes silent because it goes against their whole agenda of open borders and stuff like that, with the violence and the death that occurs on the border every day. The one saving grace right now with this coronavirus is the president has shut down immigration into the United States, I believe, for 60 or 90 days. I saw the story yesterday. I believe it's 60
days.
Immigration suspended. And the border got caught in the caravan. Where are the caravans? The president has promised 400 miles more of border wall by the election. So it's moving along. Hopefully by the end of this corona, we'll have a nice big chunk of the wall finished, and illegal immigration into our country from the southern border will slow to a crawl even more, so that the Border Patrol agents can work and are not overwhelmed. That's the problem right now. What's happening is no matter what they do, illegal immigration is going to continue at the southern border. But now with the resources and the things that they have at their hands, they won't be overwhelmed by the massive influx, and they'll be able to do their jobs more efficiently. That's the hope anyway, in the whole situation.
I mean, the people who live down there, and there's this wonderful, courageous people, especially ranchers who live on the southern border, ranchers and law enforcement officers, have been putting up with just tremendous challenges down there. And I mean, when I first went down there in September 2016, I met all these people who already were like just gung ho for Trump, and they said they were for him, you know, very early, because if anyone would remember, there were 17 Republican candidates, and the day that he separated himself was the day that he wanted to stop illegal immigration and build a wall. And it was amazing the tremendous output of agreement with them around the country, because many of us really didn't understand it that well. And I didn't understand it until I was privileged to start spending a lot of time at the Arizona border and start making friends with a lot of law enforcement officers and ranchers down there. And I say the Border Patrol guys down there, the ones I've met, you know, they helped me tremendously. They said, nobody in the Border Patrol believed when the FBI said that they were shot, you know, shooting each other. But the thing is, they were told, all the Border Patrol agents were told, that if you say anything about this publicly that's in contradiction to our official story, you're liable for termination and possible criminal prosecution. So everybody shut up. And I say one of the tragedies of my work is that one of the Border Patrol agents, one of the Border Patrol agents who was told to shut up is a family member of Nick. And I have the deepest, deepest sympathy for him and his family. But, you know, he's come out against me because he went along with the story. He has no evidence. He says that he has secret evidence. And I told him, I said, hey, let me see it. No, he doesn't have any evidence. I have the evidence. If anyone has any evidence to show any of my story is not true, I want to see it. Because as I went through the process, just like this, I looked at this as a court case. I've written thousands of crime stories about court cases. I can't even tell you the number of weeks and years that I spent sitting in courtrooms with homicides and other criminal cases. So naturally, as you go through the process, you find new information, new evidence. Some of the things that I believed when I started on this book, I thought, oh my goodness, that wasn't true. But nobody has challenged a single fact. My book has been out since November. No one has challenged a single fact. If someone calls me tomorrow and say, hey, you're a little bit off on this or that, I'll change it. But all they do is say, my story is not true. I have several reviews that people have written. But I did contact the family members. That's another life. Pardon me?
I went and looked.
Pardon me?
I went and looked at the reviews at Amazon.
Yeah, it's tragic. It's tragic that people, that I was doing my best to help the entire family. And Mark, as I told you, the greatest thing is that Nick's father-in-law, the dad of of Christy the Widow came out for me publicly on Facebook. He wrote a comment. But I understand the family doesn't want to make a big public thing of it, you know, and my sympathy, my heart has been for the family all along. But I know in my heart, I know for absolute certain that the widow and the little girls, they know what happened now. And that's exactly what Nick's father-in-law said. He said, now for the first time, I know the truth of what happened. And he said publicly that all the agents told him that it wasn't true, what the FBI was saying, that all the agents told him and that all the agents told me. But I don't blame most agents for not wanting to speak publicly. They have families. They don't want their careers ruined. They don't want their family's life ruined. But I have to say,
right.
I had three Border Patrol agents who helped me tremendously with this, risking a lot. And they're my heroes. They're my heroes. They're the ones who came out to help me. Because without their help, my book would not be nearly as good. I mean, it's good. I mean, I'm proud of it. I worked for 2.5 years. I was able to get the Border Patrol documents and FBI documents. I want to read, if I could, this is the Border Patrol document that to me, I call it my checkmate document. Those of you who play chess know, I mean, that's the end of the game. Because checkmate means that this document absolutely 100% shows that the FBI's big lie is a lie. Okay. If I could read it, it's like 3 or 4 sentences, okay? As the Omaha unit, that's code for a helicopter. As the Omaha unit found Agent Borjas in their spotlight, I approached Agent Borjas and asked her of her condition. This was 20 minutes after the shooting occurred, 20 to 30 minutes. He hiked up there and found Gracie Borjas, the other agent who was there, who was being shot at a distance of 5 to 10 feet away from her face, okay? So this is what she's telling him. I found Agent Borjas in their spotlight, the spotlight of the helicopter, and I approached Agent Borjas and asked her of her condition. She told me that she was okay and unharmed. I then asked the location of the other agents. She pointed to the Remax saddle. That's where the shooting occurred, approximately 150 yards northeast of her position. I asked Agent Borjas approximately how many suspected illegal aliens were in the group, if any were armed, and if she saw which direction they fled. Agent Borjas told me that she saw three or four individuals in the group, and she saw one long arm and was not sure which direction they fled. Okay, so does that sound, this is 20 minutes later, 20 to 30 minutes later. Does that sound like it was just a bunch of agents shooting at each other? Okay, now I'm going to read to you David Johnson, who was injured. He took gunfire, gunshots to his buttock and ankle, and then he bravely fired back at an unknown number of agents because the whole scene lit up, so he couldn't really see that well. The whole scene lit up with gunfire. So this is what he says about what happened. This is from the transcript of an FBI interview that occurred 2 days after Johnson was injured and at the site. By the way, Remax Saddle is the location of the shooting, okay, which was referred to in the last thing I just read. Okay, Johnson speaking. Well, initially, I was kind of relaxed because I knew Ivy was in the area, supposedly, because he did say he cut sign, which, he said he found footprints. He found footprints of illegal aliens. Cut sign means looking for tracks or looking for signs of illegal aliens. Okay, as we're coming down, I kind of had my guard down. And then when I seen a silhouette, it was square. It kind of looked like a smuggler with a bundle on his back, crouched over. In my mind, I was like, that's his bodies, the two he cut. Okay, that's Border Patrol talk for bodies are illegal aliens. Okay, and those, the two he cut, means Nick had reported on the radio that he saw the sign of two illegal aliens, their footprints, at the saddle. Okay, so in my mind, I was like, that's his body's body's. That's the slang for the glands, the two he cut. So I started to go investigate a little bit further. That's when the shots rang out. And initially I was, I don't know why. I was just like, stop. We're just like, hey, stop shooting. And then it kept going like that pause. And then he just kept shooting. And I was like, you have to do something. You're going to die up here. So see, this really clearly showed that he thought, they both thought they were just going to see Nick there. Because Nick had just said, hey, where are you guys at? I saw some sign of illegal aliens, but he didn't say anything about the smugglers because they were hiding. And I show a photo, I show of how thickly the thick brush and where they were hiding, okay? So the thing is that he goes up there and all of a sudden someone's shooting at him, and in the other part of that same transcript, he goes, hey. Like he's like, hey, Nick, what are you doing? Meanwhile, my conclusion is the first or second gunshot was the one that hit Nick in the head. Nick was lying there dead when all this firing was coming towards them. And they got Nick. This thing really was a good thing for the FBI to kind of use to falsify things. Was Nick's gun was actually fired. So they took Nick's gun away from him. But the firing pattern was such, it couldn't have been Nick shooting because Nick was lying face down in a pool of blood and the shell casings were way in front of him. So in other words, the guy who was shooting his firearm, I have the crime scene maps, which I actually put in my book. Okay, the guy was firing towards Dave was not Nick. Nick was lying face down. Nick never fired a shot. I'm convinced of that. He was shot and killed in like the first gunshot, and then everything happened very fast. Dave got his rifle. He shot. You see what he said? He said, "I seen the silhouette. It was square. It looked like a smuggler with a bundle on his back, because that's a very typical silhouette you would see. The smugglers have these big packs because they're carrying 50-pound loads of marijuana. And I have pictures of those many. I have a couple pictures." Trail camera pictures of the smugglers as they come through. And later he said in his FBI interview, they said, how many smugglers were there? And he goes, I don't know. Maybe there were 50 of them, because he didn't see them. He just saw muzzle fire. And then he retreated down the slope, but he knew there were smugglers shooting at him.
Right. And now the book seems like it's got a lot of very pertinent information about not only the death of Nick Ivey, but also the procedures and what's really happening down on the border with these guys. Many people I know have been down there, and you said you had met the Arizona Border Guard guys, Tim Foley and a couple of the other guys. If someone wants to get your book and they want to buy this book and read this book, where can they go to get it?
Well, they could go to Amazon Books, and they're selling. I've heard they have a slowdown. They were getting books out. You could get them in a day or two. Also, if you send me a message through my Twitter, which is Twitter handle is Decatur Legends, like Decatur, Illinois Legends, or else just Huey Freeman on my Facebook page. If you send me a message, I have a few books. I don't have that many copies left, but I could send you a signed copy if you want to send me your address. Otherwise, I say Amazon Books. Last I heard, they were slow. Like it used to be, but yeah, you could try them or you could try me. Yeah, I appreciate it, Mark. I think you're going to get a lot out of it because somebody said it was an anatomy of the cover up. I didn't initially think my book would be so long, but I got so much great information about how the FBI rolled out this cover up using the media. And then it was just as a journalist. Yeah, and I've served as a journalism professor. It was just shocking to me how no media entity examined the case after the FBI made this ridiculous announcement that you know they didn't believe anybody else was involved when all the evidence showed that they were killed by smugglers. And so the media, I don't want to be too critical of them. But it was just amazing to me. Even when I started writing the book, I thought any day maybe someone with a big name out of New York or Washington or Los Angeles would would say, wow, we're going to write this book. And I thought, no, because this is the kind of environment we live in. If Trump or George Bush had pulled some crap like this, which of course they wouldn't do it, and of course they didn't try to control the FBI and the Department of Justice like Obama did, so they wouldn't have done it and they couldn't have done it. But let's say that one of them or Ronald Reagan did something like this, you'd have 50 of the most famous liberal, or I won't even say liberal, I'm sorry I said that, just 50 of the most famous journalistic authors would be jumping all over the case. I mean, I firmly believe that. It's just, I mean, hey, I admit I'm kind of a conservative now, but I consider myself more of just an objective journalist. And my training was by be accurate, and be objective. So even though, you know, I do feel this time, you know, people are taking sides, I'm on the side of truth. And I'm the side of justice. I want to see justice come forth in this case. And I hate the way that we're all separate between conservatives and liberals. I hate that because we are all Americans. We're all people who love freedom deep down. Well, and I hate the fact that we're being lied to all the time.
I have another case you might want to investigate. And a fellow patriot is making comments on the live feed, David Allen Wright, about the Pensacola Navy base situation. There's a cover-up going on there, I believe, with arms deals and flight training and terrorists training on our soil. There's another one you might want to look into, because we believe there is a cover-up by the current administration going on there. But no one's done the investigation, no one's talking about it, and it's kind of just went away. So there's one you might want to look into. At Amazon.com, Amazon Books, Who Killed Nick Ivey? Who Shot Nick Ivey? You can find that at Amazon Books. You can go to @DecaturLegends on Twitter. And you can find Huey Freeman on Facebook. You want to reach out to him. If you get directly through him, you can get a signed copy. Is that correct, Huey?
Yeah, that's true, until I run out, because I'm not a marketing person, but I honestly don't have that many copies left. I don't know, because of the crazy situation, I don't know when I'll have more, but I definitely have a few I could send out.
Right on. And again, that's Amazon Books, folks. And if you get the book and you read it and you like it, make sure you leave a fantastic review there on the Amazon page, and enjoy the book and get some real facts and information what's going on here, because the media and people are not telling the truth in any way on any subject or any topic, it seems. When I was a kid, they would present the facts and they would let you decide where you lie in the whole thing. Now, they present you their agenda, their opinions, and how they feel about it, what they believe are facts, which are sometimes twisted lies, and you never get truth. So get some truth. Go out and buy Who Shot Nick Ivey by Huey Freeman at Amazon Books, on Twitter @DecaturLegends, and, of course, Huey Freeman on Facebook. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, Huey. Great show, great information, and I hope that the truth can continue to come out on this case. Unfortunately, right now, these cases and this stuff about the border and immigration has seemed to have taken, like, not only a back seat, but like the last seat, the last row on the longest train that you could ever imagine. People are not talking about the immigration crisis.
Yeah.
They're not talking about what's happening at the border anymore. It is gone. It's corona, and weather. Because there's no sports. There's no movies coming out. You can't go bowling. You can't do nothing. So you get corona, and now for the weather. And oil is at an all-time low, and the stock market's up and down. And now back to our regularly scheduled program. Corona. So everything else is on the back.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Mark. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And stay in touch. And when I finish the book, I'll be sure to head out on to Amazon and leave a stellar review.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure being on your show, Mark.
There you go, folks. That's Huey Freeman, author, journalist who shot Nick Ivey. Out now, it's been out for a while. Get you a copy today. Good stuff. Truth. That's what we like to bring here. We try to bring truth. And again, there's another story you might want to look into, is the Pensacola Navy base shooting here in the Sunshine State, where we believe there may be some sort of a cover-up going on there. So we'll have to start looking into that one. I want to thank David Allen Wright and the live feed for bringing that and reminding us that there are many cover-ups and that the government's really good at it. And they use their taxpayer-funded resources to do the cover-ups. You know, they're using our money to do illegal stuff. That's one of the things I hate about the taxes and paying taxes, is that we pay taxes and then they use our money for things we may not like abortion or drone attacks on 16-year-old American students in Pakistan like the Obama administration does, or, you know, all kinds of things that they cover up, or they use the media and their power from our tax dollars to trash a president and his whole administration for 3.5 years and then come up with a corona pandemic to totally trash everything. But guess what? I believe the president will be winning in a landslide in November. And believe you me, folks, if you can go to Walmart and buy tomatoes and, you know, Depends for grandma, you can go to the voting booths, because there's plenty of space between those little booths that you sign and you fill in the little round circle with your pen. Plenty of space to social distance at the polling booths. So make sure you get out and vote. Vote for the right candidates. Vote with your conscience. All right, you may not like certain people. Understood. But remember, America's depending on you to make the right choice. Trump 2020, keep America great. With that, I want to wrap up this show with my good friend Dave Bray, DaveBrayUSA.com. You can get some good apparel, some merchandise over there, his CD. He's working on some new music. This is his version of the Star Spangled Banner. I have the flag here behind me. We're going to rise, and we're going to enjoy the national anthem. It's sung by Dave Bray, DaveBrayUSA.com. Please rise, because here at Patriot Nation Radio, we rise for the flag and we kneel for the cross. DaveBrayUSA.com. If I can get it to play. Here it goes. After this ad, it always comes with an ad. And here we go. That's right, folks. That's Dave Bray's version of the Star Spangled Banner. Check it out today, DaveBrayUSA.com. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in, because without you, there is no show. And until we meet again next Wednesday, 10:30 a.m. The show may be going back to the evenings here real soon, as my job is talking about canning second shift and going back to regular hours. So we may switch back to evening shows here Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern. Stay tuned for updates and details. And until we meet again, good night, good day, God bless you, and God bless America.